Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning and happy President's Day again, everybody. Coming up in a few minutes, we will talk to Patricia Cohen, author of a new book that's a cultural history of middle age. Middle age is not a certain set of years, she says. It's a culturally constructed idea of who we are. And it was different for the World War II generation than for baby boomers, for example. And to kind of set that up, I thought we might hear from some listeners who are 40 or older on how your politics have changed as you've aged. Do you know the old saying usually ascribed to Winston Churchill? If you're not a liberal when you're 20, you have no heart. If you're not a conservative when you're 40, you have no head. And the question is, has your own political evolution been consistent with that idea or not? How have you changed politically from youth to middle age? You can keep this conversation going on our website, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show to leave your comments there. You can also tweet us. Use the handle at Brian Lehrer. You can post to our Facebook page as well, Brian Lehrer WNYC. Now, we're not so much looking for you to tell us that you haven't changed. Rather, if you're 40 or above, do you now think if you're not a liberal when you're 20, you have no heart? If you're not a conservative when you're 40, you have no head? Based on your own political evolution. I don't care whether you've moved left or right or moved however, but you need to have moved. If you're 40 or above, we want you to now look back and think about whether you got it right when you were 20 or not. Do you think you were naive? Leave a comment on our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show and keep this conversation going. And there are earlier versions of that quote, by the way. Apparently, it goes back to mid-1900s or mid-19th century France, where a French politician was talking about the conflict at that time there between a republic and a monarchy. And this guy was a monarchist. And he says, if you weren't a Republican, meaning for a republic, when you were 20, then you had no heart. If you weren't a monarchist by the time you were 40, then you had no head. So that was the original context, apparently. And then other people have used it. If you weren't a communist when you were 20, then if you weren't a capitalist by the time you were 40, you have no head. So there are different versions of that quote around. The one that usually gets cited is that way Churchill said it, probably paraphrasing one of the earlier ones. But his quote was, if you're not a liberal when you're 20, you have no heart. And if you're not a conservative when you're 40, you have no head. And some people said it was socialist at 20 and conservative at 40. But that's what we want to hear you react to. And we can also consider the Occupy movement, which is mostly a young person's movement, often cited as idealistic, or Ron Paul supporters, also mostly young people, since he's a utopian, compared to the Tea Party, which is mostly over 40. How do you see those movements in the context of this quote? Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and put your comment there on whether you think this quote or this idea has some basis in your experience. You can also tweet us at Brian Lehrer or go to our Facebook page and tell everybody about how this quote fits your experience there. Jim in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling, Jim. Hi.
Hi, how are you? I'm in my late 40s. The first time I voted in 1976, I voted for Gerald Ford over Jimmy Carter and considered myself, I guess, fairly conservative. I wasn't a hardcore conservative, but fairly conservative. Because, you know, I was a bright young guy. I had won scholarships to go to Ivy League universities. I came from a background which people didn't really appreciate education. At least some people around me didn't appreciate education. And I was very impressed with myself, what I had accomplished through my own efforts as an intelligent young guy going to good schools. I'm an academic now, and I'm very much a person of the left. Much more so than most people. And I think that's because I now understand the nature of unfairness, the nature of all types of barriers to people being advanced, the kind of simplistic, you know, up by bootstraps accomplishments I had at age 18, 19. That seems very silly to me now that I really understand the world on a deeper level.
Jim, thank you. Great start. And James in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, James. James, are you there? James, I will get back to you. How about Bernie in Oceanside? Bernie, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good morning.
Thank you so much for calling in.
Well, let me start off by saying the quote, as I came across it most often, was, if you're not a socialist when you're 20, and then if you're, you know, by the time you're 40, you should be a conservative.
I can't, or a capitalist.
Or a capitalist. I cast my first vote for a president, I think it was 1968, for Eldridge Cleaver and the Peace and Freedom Party.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a long history going back to my teens of involvement in Communist Front groups, radical groups, revolutionary groups, SDS, SNCC, Black Panthers, Angela Davis. And over the years, I evolved so far away from that towards the center, not past the center. I'm still a moderately liberal Obama Democrat. And the thing that I ascribe my evolution to is that more than anything else, I'm an empiricist. I look around me and I try to be honest in my observation about the world. And I try to push the rhetoric and the ideology aside. It's easy to talk about being anti-colonialist or imperialist, but when you look at what happened to African nations after the Western powers were ejected, the reality is very different. The same thing is true with the Black Panthers. I could go on and on and on and on. And I realized the enthusiasm for left-wing revolutions were fine until they came to power in Russia, in China, and they wound up being extremely bloody and repressive and killed so many people so far away from the idealistic goals that people articulated when they first began. And so I've become a more practical person, and I realize that moderately liberal politics make much more sense. And people who are of the left and the far left blind themselves to reality by letting ideology and rhetoric cloud their thinking.
Thank you very much.
And that's my evolution.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Bernie. I appreciate it. Emily in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Emily.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. How you doing? What are you thinking?
Good, thanks. Okay, well, I'm 22. I'm just finishing my senior year in college. I'm going into my second semester in college, and I definitely think that it's a pretty liberal setting. I think that because we're exposed to so many to people of such diverse economic situations and lifestyle choices, that it's hard to like look at someone you know who has taken a different path or who's a different diversity and say, no, you don't deserve the same rights as me or something like that. It's just crazy because it just, you know. So I think that definitely pushes a more liberal agenda in terms of social issues. And also, I think we're just coming of age during the Obama wave. You know, in 2008, that was our first year to vote, and it was so exciting with, you know, change you can believe in. Do I see myself going more moderate eventually fiscally? Perhaps, especially probably when I'm getting my own, you know, paycheck and stuff like that. Definitely financially more fiscally and more moderate. But I think socially, I think I'll remain to be the liberal that I am now.
It sounds like your personal experience affected your views as they started
Absolutely.
To take shape because you met people from different backgrounds than yourself in college?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you just
Definitely.
Got to hear different people's stories and that put, you know, kind of many different casts on your own thinking.
Exactly.
Emily, thank you very much. Keep calling us until you're 40, at least 40. James in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. I think we got you now, right?
Yes, yes. Hi, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Yes, when I was younger, I guess in my early 20s, I was sort of social democratic liberal, not really radical socialist liberal, but I was a big McGovernite and anti-war Democrat. And my views have evolved towards to push me into the center and maybe a little bit right of center, sort of moderate, but there are left things that I also still agree with. But part of that has to do with life experiences. I mean, having been mugged a few times, your attitude changes about law and order and crime. Learning about economics, learning how wealth is created. I mean, my passion when I was younger in politics remains my passion, is how do we reduce inequality and help the poor have better lives. And I've become persuaded that the free market and enterprise is the way to go on that rather than the government shifting wealth around by, you know, taxing the rich and giving to the poor.
And is it an intellectual evolution by
yes.
just,
yes.
you know, understanding things better as you
yes,
see it?
And learning things and becoming concerned. I mean, when I was 20 in the McGovern campaign, the last issue that I would have been interested in or know anything about was Social Security and Medicare and how it should be funded. and that kind of thing. I mean, most young people are not thinking about that sort of thing. And as you get older, you do begin to think about those sorts of things. And it does have a sort of moderating effect on you.
Yes. And I'm interested in the, you know, intersection for different people between an intellectual evolution and something that's based in their personal experience.
I
for
think
example,
mine has
you
been primarily intellectual, with some life experience.
You also you quoted that famous experiential quote, though: "A conservative is a liberal who's
exactly.
been mugged."
Yes, exactly.
And then there are things on the other side that say a liberal is a conservative who's been laid off, and things like that. Did anything happen to you personally that moved your views?
Yes. Well, what personally happened to me on Law and Order, for instance, I think I still believe what I believed as a young idealistic person, that most criminals come from very broken home backgrounds and all of that. But being on the other end of a mugging makes you think, well, I don't really care about that in the sense that, yes, of course, it's true that this poor guy was raised in the surroundings where he became this monster. But that doesn't mean society shouldn't just arrest such people and put them away and protect the rest of us, while also at the same time trying to address the issues which create that kind of person. But your attitude hardens about the criminality, about the wrong and the harm that they do to other people. I mean, now I view crime as something that, you know, bad people do to other people. They do bad things to other people. And when I hear a lot of talk about people in prisons and stuff like that, my thought is always, well, you know, you should never do a prison show without also talking about the victims of their crimes. You should never have those people not say something about, well, you know, I got here and I don't want to be here and I shouldn't be in here, but the fact is I hurt people.
I really hurt people. James, I'm going
to
leave it there.
Do.
Thank you very much. And Joel in Union, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joel.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I grew up as a liberal. I was part of the civil rights movement and marched on Washington during the Vietnam War. I'm actually 65 now. But for the last 6 years, I've been reading intensely. I've read a lot of Thomas Frank, including his recent book, Pity the Billionaire. People like Chris Hedges, Kevin Phillips, John Dean, Misha Glennie on the worldwide crime, and Les Leopold's book, The Looting of America. I've become much more pessimistic about how the system works and who's in charge. I mean, just that Pity the Billionaire book, which is brilliant, of Thomas Frank's. I went to his book signing last week at BNN. They did a real hatchet job in it in the New York Times Book Review.
But is your evolution then from liberal to radical?
You know, I call myself a non-ideological radical, and I have a lot of friends who are much more radical than me, and I couldn't put my finger on why I couldn't take, you know, the revolution books and communist line. The reason, finally, is because they're all utopians.
Mm.
The people on the right and the left are utopians, and the person who called earlier and said their ideals are great, but when they get into power, they're terrible, that's the nature of utopianism. They don't understand systems. They don't understand complexity. And I've been struggling to do it, and one can never do it fully, but it's not in the mainstream media. You have to read these things. They're fascinating books. They're often very easy to read, well-written books.
Joel, thank you very much. Keep calling us. Ben in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ben.
Hey, how you doing, Brian?
Good.
I'm 32, and I grew up in northeastern New Jersey, classic blue state. Pretty much a liberal family, socially and fiscally liberal, not overly political, but I always defaulted to kind of a blue, democratic, liberal stance on everything. And in this past year of my life, fiscally speaking, I really have started to shift to the deregulation, kind of more conservative, generally spoken of as Republican point of view.
And tell us why. Is it personal experience? Is it that you're gaining more wealth and you feel you have something more to protect? Or what do you think is the cause of your shift?
Yeah, I think it's primarily personal experience. I went into business for myself, and I have three small businesses, and they're successful. And I really struggle with all the regulation in New York City and New York State. Not federal regulation. This is all city and state stuff, but it's just so burdensome that was, I think, the initial shift that started me kind of questioning, just generally questioning my views. And it's just slowly kind of snowballed. And then I woke up, you know, 6 months ago and I thought, am I a conservative now?
Who do you think you're going to vote for in November?
I'm so happy you asked. So I voted for Obama last time, and I think if Romney gets the nomination, I'm going to give him a shot. Because nothing he says bothers me too much, and I'm really unhappy with what Obama has done. So I figure we'll just give him a spin. I don't love Romney. I don't think he's great, but I'm willing to give him a chance. If Gingrich gets it, I don't know. I can't see myself voting for Newt Gingrich. I mean, come on, it's Newt Gingrich.
Ben, thank you very much. Boy, did he just make the Romney is electable case, right, for voters in the primaries choosing on electability. All right, one more. Then we're going to bring in Patricia Cohen, cultural writer for The New York Times, who has a new book on the cultural history of middle age. So we will put this evolution of politics into middle age conversation in a broader context right after we hear from Dean in Northport, who I think is now looking down the other way. Right, Dean?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to comment. You know, I did a 360 in my political orientation from being very Reagan Republican to being liberal. And that occurred.
I have to say for the record that that's a 180, because 360 leaves you back where you started.
I'm sorry, 180. But I just wanted to comment on my children, who are just totally, they're well-educated, well-read, but they're totally disenfranchised from either of the mainstream parties. And I really think that the intersection of religion and politics has a lot to do with this.
Go ahead. Give me one more thought on that.
Well, I just see them as being even more cynical than you know, people who are, you know, in the next generation, and having even less of a sense of political efficacy. I mean, they just don't feel as if they can have that they have any power within the current system.
What do you think would turn that around and make your kids more engaged and more feel that there is enfranchisement for them?
For them, because they are well-educated and know what's going on, overturning Citizens United.
There you go. Dean, thank you very much. And thanks to all of you who called in on this very interesting segment. And we will broaden it next with Patricia Cohen, author of A New Social History of Middle Age, How It's Different for Boomers, Xers, and Their Parents, and more. Stay with us.